In our last studies, we've been talking about a number of things as it pertains to the Bible doctrine of expediency. And we noted in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 23 through verse 33, is where we want to begin our study this evening. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 23 through 33. Several things, of course, we seem to always want to talk about. There's going to be a lack of time, no doubt, but let's begin at this text, verse 23. All things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful, but not all things edify. Let no man seek his own, but each his neighbor's good. Whatsoever is sold in the shambles, eat, asking no question, for conscience' sake. For the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof. If one of them that believe not biddeth you to a feast, and ye are disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question, for conscience' sake. But if any man say unto you, this hath been offered in sacrifice, eat not, for his sake that showed it, and for conscience' sake, conscience I say, not thine own, but the other's. For why is my liberty judged by another conscience? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I evil spoken of for that for which I give thanks? Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no occasion of stumbling, either to Jews or to Greeks, or to the church of God, even as I also please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of the many, that they may be saved. Chapter 11, verse 1 concludes, Be ye imitators of me, even as I also am of Christ. Now in these verses, it's a given, as the Apostle Paul sets forth this principle, that if it does not edify, if it tears down, then we ought not do that. In this context, he's talking about things that are in and of themselves right. Is it wrong to eat meats? No, not wrong to eat meat. Is it wrong in this context even to eat a part of a beef or whatever that had been sacrificed to an idol? Well, in this context, it wasn't. In this context, he says at verse 25, Whatsoever is sold in the shambles, eat, asking no questions for conscience' sake. Now, the practice was that folks would kill an animal. A part of the animal would be taken to the idol's temple and there either offered or given to the priest in the idol's temple for either a sacrifice or consumption of the priest. Other parts, or the leftover parts of the animal, would be taken to the marketplace, sold for food. Now, is there anything wrong if you go to the marketplace and buy a piece of meat whereof a part of that had been used in the idol's temple? In that circumstance, no, not anything wrong with that, except, let's suppose that you've got somebody that is now a member of the church, but they've come from that kind of background. They've been used to that. And in their mind, they think that if they eat a piece of meat that's bought in the marketplace, then it could be possible that a portion of that meat was used in sacrifice to the idol, so they won't eat it. Now, where does that put you? Is it all right for you to eat the meat that's been bought in the marketplace? Now, suppose your brother says, who has a conscience problem with this, wait a minute, where'd that meat come from? You say, well, it was bought in the marketplace. He said, I won't eat it. What are you to do now? You don't eat it. You don't offer it to him to eat. Now, why? Randy? You don't want to violate his conscience. Now, that establishes an interesting principle that applies in the realm of conscience and the realm of judgments. Both of those. Now, to illustrate the point, Paul uses this. Now, what does he say that would be the solution to that in the 1 Corinthians letter backing up to the 8th chapter? He said, if my brother has a problem with that, Paul said, what'll I do relative to my eating of meat? He said, I'll eat meats no more forever. Now, why would he do that? Because, as Randy said, I don't want to do something that's going to cause my brother to be offended. Now, not just mean I'm going to do something that he don't like. That's not the point. That's not what the word offense means in this passage. The word offense in this passage means to do something that will cause him to do something he believes is wrong. Now, you may do things that I just don't like. That's a matter of personal preference. But if you do something I think is sinful, whether it is or not, at this point of our consideration is beside the point. But let's suppose you do something that I think is sinful, and by your doing it, I participate in it, believing it to be sinful. What have I done? I've sinned. Now, we've established that there's nothing wrong with eating the meats that came from the marketplace, except for this fellow who thinks it's wrong. Now, if he does it, he's violated his conscience. And if you persuade him to do it through your influence, in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, he says, you've caused your brother to perish. Now, that's important. Randy, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the New American Standard says stumble.
Right.
Who causes my brother to stumble?
Right, right. Now, Paul asked an interesting question. Manuel, did you have a question there? I don't know if I saw your hand or not. Oh, Roy, I guess I saw some hand back there.
I'm not clear on what you're saying. If my brother believes it's a sin to eat meat, and I invite him over for dinner, I don't cook meat for him.
That's right.
But I don't have a problem with it. You tell me I can't do it at all.
No, you just don't do it while he's there. You see, because if you try to persuade him to do it, and that's what it would be, if you invite me over for hamburger and I think that's sin, you see, and I come and you fixed up a big batch of hamburgers and I say, Roy, I can't eat that. And you say, well, there's nothing wrong with that. And I say, well, Roy's pretty smart, so I'll go ahead and eat it. But I'm not convinced. But because Roy's pretty smart, I'm going to go ahead and do it. What have I done? I've done the very thing I thought was sinful. Who caused me to do it? You did. Now, if I believe it's wrong to eat hamburgers and you invite me over, you better fix me a salad. You see the point?
Catfish.
Yeah, or catfish. Yeah. You can fix me catfish.
That's me.
But it's not a hamburger.
He said hamburger. It's pretty clear. If you want me to read chapter 8, I'll do it.
Well, let's go back and read chapter 8. I thought we'd read that, but just go ahead and read the chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 8.
Therefore, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things, and we exist for him, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we exist through him. However, not all men have this knowledge, but some, being accustomed to the idol until now, eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. But take care lest this liberty of yours somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if someone sees you, who have knowledge, dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. And thus, by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, that I may not cause my brother to stumble.
Does that clarify it, Roy?
Just never eat meat again. That's telling me, don't eat it.
If what?
If it causes him to stumble.
That's right.
It's kind of a hyperbole, really.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And why would you do that? Let's go back to the 10th chapter and answer it. Paul asked the question in the 10th chapter, beginning at verse 28. But if any man say unto you, this hath been offered in sacrifice, eat not, for his sake that showed it, and for conscience sake. Conscience, I say, not thine own, but the other's, for why is my liberty judged by another conscience? Now there's the question. Paul is dealing with things that we're at liberty to do. It's not wrong to eat the meat. Then he says, why can't I eat it? Why am I prohibited from doing this, which is right in and of itself, by my brother's conscience? Now he answers the question. Read on. He said, if I partake with thankfulness, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? Or whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no occasion of stumbling either to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God, even as I also please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of the many, that they may be saved. Now our conscience is important. If I do something that deliberately causes you to violate your conscience, I've messed up. I've caused you to do something that you believe is wrong. Now, if you'll turn over to the book of the third chapter of 1 John. The third chapter of 1 John. And if you'll begin reading at verse 19, John elaborates on this same point. John says at verse 19, "Hereby shall we know that we are of the truth, and shall assure our heart before Him. Because if our heart condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knoweth all things." Now, think about that. If your heart condemns you, what's he saying? Let your conscience be your guide? No. No, he's not saying that. But what he is saying, in the realm of the things that are right, we're not talking about things over here now that God has said don't do, or things that are blatantly sinful. But in the realm of things over here that Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10, are liberties. You may do them. Then why is my liberty prohibited by another's conscience? Well, that person thinks it's sinful. Now, we're talking about things in the realm of liberty. We may do, but God hasn't commanded us to do them. They're in the realm of liberty. Now, in that realm, one may view it this way, one may view it that way. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, however, he's talking about the eating of meats. Now Paul says, we know that the eating of meat, nothing wrong with that. And we know that the idol is nothing. There's just one God. But not all men know that. In times past, some being used to this practice of worshiping multiple gods, and now they become a member of the large church. They understand there's one God, but they still have a hang-up because of the past practices. Now, am I to force them to do these things that they have a problem with? No. Randy, go ahead.
Well, you're not to force them, but there's no sense in being satisfied with someone's ignorance.
Well, that's true. We're going to get to that.
The point is teach.
Yeah, the point is teach. That's true. We're going to get to that. Right.
It says that we're to stir up one another in love and
good works. Yeah.
Now, if we are influencing someone, if someone sees us conducting our lives in a certain way, like eating meat, that violates their conscience, we're not stirring them up unto good works. If we're influencing them to violate their conscience,
we've offended. No, we've caused them to stumble. And as Paul stated in the 8th chapter, Randy, as you read, that'll cause them to perish. Now, if we cause our brother to perish, where does that put us? Same boat. Yeah, we've not demonstrated love for our brother.
I don't want to take too much time on it. Let's just think my brother, he believes it's sinful to eat meat.
Okay.
So do I got to hide that I eat?
Not unless through your influence you cause him to do it. You see. Now, that doesn't mean that I can't do it because he can't do it. I can't do it in a circumstance where through my action it's going to cause him to do it. And still he believes it's wrong. For if he does it believing it's wrong, he's sinned. And who caused him to? You did. Does that make sense? Getting clearer?
Yeah.
All right, Chris? All right, anyone? All right. Now, Randy made an interesting observation. Does that mean then, because somebody has a conscience problem with something, that I ought not to try to teach them? Well, Paul's point in 1 Corinthians 8 is not everybody has this knowledge. Not everybody has this understanding. Now, what do you do to try to correct somebody in their understanding? You teach them. You show them. You help them to understand. David?
I think when we did this before, this class before, commitment, yeah. even to something that you need, or it has control of you, so yeah. now it's bad for you too. So that's another point.
All right.
All things are awful, but not all things are expedient.
That's true.
Chocolate.
Yeah. We really don't want to go there, do we? All right. Yeah, time to quit. There's a time to be silent. Yeah. If it gains control over you, now we're talking about self-control, and that's a matter that is addressed. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. Now, before we get beyond, well, look up there. Before we get beyond the things that we want to be discussing, I want to keep this kind of on track. We've got to qualify this statement. I've thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. We need to qualify that statement. We're talking about if the practice causes division in the Lord's body, it is wrong. Well, I want to tie this statement together with this one. A commandment must be obeyed or done even if it causes division. We can't set aside the commandments of God because of somebody's conscience. Can't do that. You'll notice in Acts chapter 4, Randy, you're a good reader. Let's read that, please. Acts 4, verses 18 through 20, please. Just a bit of the context. We notice that the apostles have been arrested. They've been charged not to speak or teach anymore in the name of Christ. And what do they say?
Acts 4, 18 through 20. And when they had summoned them, they commanded them not to speak or teach at all in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered,
All right, question. Had God commissioned them as apostles to go teach? Now, this was before or after the Great Commission was given. Their responsibility under the direction of Christ was go teach. Now, could they, because the Jewish hierarchy had commanded them not to teach, could they do that? Well, let's suppose somebody thinks it's wrong for them to teach. Can they do that? Well, no, because Christ had commanded them to. And so they said, that's what we will do. I don't care what you say or anybody says. We're going to do what the Lord said do. Now, did the Lord say, eat meats? Can I forbear on that? Or do I have to eat meats? Do I have to run over my brother? And he says, no, I don't think I should eat meats. And I said, well, you're going to if you come to my house. Can I do that to him? Do I have to eat meats and do I have to compel him to eat them? Well, no. Now, if the practice causes division in the Lord's body, it is wrong. Now, if we're looking in the realm of liberty such as this, and I compel my brother to do something that he believes is wrong, then I've committed sin and I need to set that thing aside. Now, my application of that principle is one I want you to understand. When I talk with many of my brethren about such practices as institutionalism, even about such issues as mechanical instruments of music in worship, when I talk to folks about the sponsoring church arrangement, when I talk to folks about the recreational craze that seems to be so attached to so many churches, one of the questions that I like to ask is, does God compel us to do these things? In other words, if I do not do these things, am I committing sin? Now, how would you answer that question? Do you know of anybody on the top side of God's green earth that contends that if you do not support various kinds of institutions out of the Lord's treasury, that you're committing sin? But you know a lot of folks who practice that, don't you? Do you know anybody on the top side of God's green earth that contends in your worship you must use mechanical instruments of music or you're committing sin? Do you know anybody that argues that? Do you know anybody that argues and says, well, unless we formulate a pyramid kind of organization of the church where money is funneled through a sponsoring church eldership, that you're committing sin? You must do that. Now, the argument that I've tried to get folks to see is a very simple one. That unless you're willing to make the argument that we must do these things, then to you, I won't concede this, but to you, it's a matter of liberty. Now, it is not a matter of liberty, but unless they contend it is a must, then it is a matter of liberty in their understanding. Now, my question is a simple one. Why? Why would you divide the Lord's body over something, even according to your understanding, is something you don't have to do? Now, did I make my point on that? Does everybody understand the point I'm trying to drive home? Now, I've asked my brethren that. You don't believe that we have to practice institutionalism. You don't believe that as the Lord's church, we have to install a fellowship hall and a playground and all of these kinds of equipment. You don't believe we have to do that to please the Lord. Now, I'm opposed to it. I believe it's sinful. But by the same token, you do not believe it's sinful to not do those things. Now, why then do you drive a wedge among the Lord's people by insisting that we do those things? Now, does that sound to you like a legitimate question? Now, if, now again, I'm not conceding at all. I'm opposed to those practices, and you understand that. But if, in the mind of the fellow who wants to practice those things, he sees them as a matter of liberty, but yet he's going to insist upon the practice of those things even if it divides the Lord's body. What's that fellow telling me? Don't mean a thing to him. What about his love for me? John? That's right. Now you're getting the point that I want to drive home. I've had this argument many, many times with folks. And one of the things that seems a failure is to answer the question. How can you say that you love the Lord's body when here is something that you say, we can do it this or we can do it this, but we're going to do it this, and if you don't like it, get out. Now there's something lacking in that. Woefully lacking in that. Now some of you are familiar with the history of some of these things. We're going to talk about that. But those of you who are familiar with the history of some of these things recall that when some of these things were introduced and brethren began to oppose the practice of some of these things, some brother began to spread like wildfire the doctrine, let's quarantine those folks. Now you understand what's happening. Let's quarantine, that's their word, not mine. Let's quarantine those folks. In other words, either they'll go along with it or they'll get out. Now, what's that say about my conscience, even if it be considered a matter of liberty? What you're saying to me, if you take that position, you don't care one whit about what I feel about it. You don't care one whit about what my conscience dictates, and you don't want to study it with me. You're going to do it anyway, or get out. Now, friend, what we've read about Paul's statements regarding eating of meats, lest I offend my brother's conscience, he acknowledges that's in the matter of liberty. But Roy, knowing that your brother had a problem with that, would you demand or insist that he do it? You see, you don't have to eat meat. You certainly don't have to do it in his presence. And if you love him, you won't.
I might begrudgingly not eat it while he's there.
Okay. But you won't do it. Now, here's the history of it. All of these things has caused division in the Lord's body. None of these things that we've mentioned are points where people say we must do that. No one's ever argued that. But you see what it has done? Now our statement up here, all things are lawful, but not all things edify. Now let's return to our question. Why in the world would you insist on doing something that you know is going to divide the Lord's body? Something that you acknowledge is in the realm of liberty. That's your view, that it's in the realm of liberty. Why would you drive such a wedge of division in the Lord's body over something you acknowledge? We don't have to do that. Now, take a stab at answering that. David? Well, that is. It is. He commands love of brethren.
Well, true, but if someone
That's outside the circle. Keep in mind, Paul says all things are lawful, but not all things edify. When we're talking about those things, now we're outside the circle of lawful things.
Right. Sorry,
I'm just clarifying. Got it. Terry? Oops. Oh, yeah.
A lot of times, yeah. And that's why some of these practices have been insisted upon.
Right. A number of years ago, if I thought long enough, I believe I could tell you the preacher that told me this. Older guy, and he was right as could be because he'd seen it throughout his life in history. And he said, you just look at the denominational world and look at their practices. He said, you add about 10 to 15 years to that and the Lord's church will be trying to practice it. You'll have to fight it out. And same principle. You're right. All right, we've hammered this point sufficiently, I think, but if you look just a little further, in order for a thing to be considered a Bible expedient, it must not offend the conscience of a brother. Now, we've talked about that, and you see that that rule governs only in the matter of expediencies, that is, in the realm of liberties. In matters specified, we had no choice but to obey or disobey. Let me illustrate. Let's just suppose that some brother comes in and he's been converted out of a denominational religion, but not all the denominational religion is stamped out of him. Now, we understand that. Sometimes folks, as Randy has pointed out, need to continue to be taught. And that's what Jesus said to the apostles. Go teach or make disciples, baptize them, and then teach them. So this element of teaching is an ongoing thing. And what we notice, the point I'm trying to establish, is in matters specified, we have no choice but to obey. Let's suppose we've got a brother who is a babe in Christ, and he has from his background the view that to observe the Lord's Supper every week upon the first day of the week, that just minimizes the importance of the Lord's Supper, and so he has some objection to that. He thinks it ought to be some great thing in his mind to the extent that it only occurs once a year. That weekly observance is just something he doesn't think is necessary. Now, question. Am I going to surrender on behalf of his conscience? Can I?
No.
I cannot. Because we learn that Paul said the very thing that he had taught those in Corinth, he had received of the Lord. And we see that exemplified in the church in Troas when they came together upon the first day of the week to break bread. Now, how often does the first day of the week occur? Once a week. Now, one of the easiest things that I know of to get people to see that is just ask the question, does God know the difference between yearly, monthly, and weekly? Yearly observance, how did He tell them? What day of the year? Monthly observance, how did He tell them? First day of the, or the what day of the month? Weekly observance. How did you tell them? Name the day of the week. Now you can see evidence of every one of those in the Old Testament as it's illustrated there. Just to illustrate the weekly observance, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. How often were they to remember the Sabbath day? Quarterly? Monthly? Yearly? Weekly. As often as there was a Sabbath day. Now, I cannot surrender that on behalf of someone's conscience. Because here is an area that is not a matter of liberty. It is a matter of obedience or disobedience. And if he has a conscience problem with that, then I cannot disobey God to respect his conscience. I can't do it. Any questions?
Well, that's where the teaching comes in. If somebody's going to come in and say we should do it once a year, then the next question is, shall we go chapter and verse?
Well, yeah, but we've got to pursue this with every issue that's raised. And determine, is this in fact a matter of liberty? Or is it something that God has legislated? We've got to practice that. Now, let's review just a bit. In order for a thing to be considered as a Bible expedient, it must first be lawful. Now, David, if it's outside the circle of lawful, it's not expedient. All right? Secondly, every addition or substitution outside the circle, it's not lawful. Now, it relies upon man's wisdom rather than God's wisdom. Now, you remember the passage we began this whole series of studies with. By what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority? And Jesus answered the question, John's baptism, whence was it? From heaven or from men? Now, what does that suggest about the possible sources of authority? How many are there? Two. It's either heaven or men. Now, what we're looking at is, if it's lawful, then the authority came from heaven, and how is it established? Yes, but one of three ways. Direct statement or command, approved apostolic example, or a necessary inference. And again, all that is a forced conclusion based upon the data that's given. And every one of us who have studied any at all in mathematics are familiar with the equation that if A equals B and B equals C, then what about A's relationship to C? They're equal. Now that's a logical deduction. Can you come to any other deduction? That is a forced conclusion. Sometimes such facts are given in the Scriptures, and we've illustrated them when we studied that there is only one possible conclusion. And we see that Jesus used that method of teaching the Sadducees in Matthew chapter 22 relative to the resurrection. He led them to only one conclusion. Now, he didn't state the conclusion, but they got it because they sought to kill him. They understood what he said. Now, what we see then, number three, is that expediency cannot be claimed if a practice changes or adds to God's Word. You can't add to what it says. You can't take away from what it says and claim that it's expedient. Because then it is not an aid. It doesn't expedite. Now it has become an addition. And of course, that's forbidden. We can't do that. And number four, remember, expediency involves the right of choice within the realm, and I put in parentheses, the same class or kind of that which is authorized in the New Testament. Now, we used an Old Testament illustration of this point. When God told Noah to build the ark out of gopher wood, did he have the ability to choose which log? Yes. Did he have the ability to choose how he sawed the log? Yes, but did he have the ability to choose to build it out of another wood? No. No. Now you see that principle. Now we multiplied illustrations through the Old Testament. And we've noted in Romans the 15th chapter and in verse 4 that these things are written for our example. We learn from these things. And if we can learn this principle from these things, that when you go beyond the same realm or class of the thing that God has authorized, now you're outside that circle, David. You can't do that. Now, we've illustrated the point regarding singing. When we use song books, are we doing any more or less than singing? No. If we were to put the songs up here on the screen, didn't have song books, we read it from the screen, are we doing anything more or less than singing? Are we? No. If we have somebody stand before us and get us started at the same time and stop us at the same time, are we doing anything more or less than singing? Now, all of these, you see, simply aid in doing the very thing that God said. But now, if we get a 52-piece band in here, are we doing anything more or less than singing? You see, we've altered the command. Now, I might like it. It might be an emotional charge to me. But we've altered the command. Now, that's what we're going to drive at when we get to talking about some of these things that involve institutional practices and sponsoring church arrangements and fellowship halls and fun and frolic. We've got a lot of things to talk about, but let's answer some of these questions. Why must something be lawful before it can be considered expedient? Why? Now, that ought to be a real simple answer. Well, yeah. Otherwise, we're acting by our own authority. If we're outside the circle of that which is lawful, then we're rejecting God. So we can't do that. Now, it does make a difference. In Matthew, the 15th chapter, in verse 9, Jesus said, "In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men." In vain they worship me. Now, if you cite man as the authority, that's what you do. Your worship then becomes vain. Well, you don't want to do that. It becomes empty or worthless. Number two, what is it about specific authority that rules out the use of other quote-unquote expediencies? Now, perhaps that question isn't worded as well as it could be, but I want you to notice the difference between generic and specific authority. Randy?
Specific authority excludes.
Yes, that's correct. And generic authority includes. Now, in the realm of choices, we might choose what choice? We can do that. Call that an expediency, an aid. But to go beyond the thing authorized, it no longer is an aid, but it is an addition. And of course, that's what you see on this chart. Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." That's simple enough. If you're not willing to abide David inside that circle, then the point is, you don't love him. Okay? Number three, is the use of instrumental music in worship an expedient way to carry out God's command to sing? And we've got to think about that. God said, sing. Now, when we use an instrument of music, we were talking about Randy, I think, when we were talking about this. Randy plays the drums. And from what I understand, does a pretty good job of it. Now, you might like drum playing. You might like to listen to drums being played. But let's ask the question. What is it that has been communicated to me about the commandments of God by Randy playing on the drums? Not one thing. Now, I want you to see that that is not an aid. It doesn't expedite singing. It becomes another kind. It's another kind of music. Now, let me hasten to say just here, because sometimes when I've tried to make this point, folks have asked me, "Then you believe that instrumental music is wrong?" No! No, I don't believe instrumental music is wrong. If I did, I wouldn't have played a cornet or a trumpet for about 8 years of my life. No, that's what I played, cornet or trumpet. I have a cornet, but anyway. But I wouldn't have played that if I thought the playing of a musical instrument is wrong. No! I certainly wouldn't have encouraged my girls to be in the high school band if I believed instrumental music is wrong. That's not the point. But now we've got another point on the floor. Instrumental music in worship. Now that's a whole other thing, isn't it? Does God have the right to tell us how He wants to be worshipped? Yes. Terry? Yes.
Yes, and verse 24, that Jesus instructs the woman there, or says to the woman that God is spirit, and those that worship Him must worship in truth, in spirit and in truth.
Both.
And both. And then, of course, we see over in the 17th chapter of John that truth is defined.
Yes. Thy word is truth.
We have to worship according to the word of God.
That's right. David, did I cut you off?
That's why all of this discussion matters.
It's pertinent, yes. From the beginning of this discussion, not just tonight, but yes.
Yeah, and I've heard people say, "Well, it don't really matter, God doesn't really care." But when Uzzah reached up to touch the ark, he got struck dead not because... You know, that he wasn't doing a good thing. I mean, he was trying to do what to save the ark, but the problem was they weren't carried the way God told them. He had a specific way.
That's right.
If he wanted to carry it the other way, he would have gone.
That's right.
Because they didn't carry it the way he said. He started dead. So that shows you God does care about the rules that he set down.
That's right. All right. Okay, any other questions or comments on this question? Well, let's look at question number four. What principle makes it necessary for an expedient to edify or build up? What principle? And we talked about that in 1 Corinthians 8, 1 Corinthians 10 specifically. What principle makes it important that I'm concerned about building you up Terry pointed that out from Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. Paul did in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. What principle governs? Love of my brethren. Why in the world would I want to do something that's going to cause you to stumble? Now that's just foolishness. That's the principle that abides. Now Paul, in writing to the Philippians, said in Philippians chapter 2, verse 4, not looking each of you to his own things, but each of you also to the things of others. Now if I'm interested in your soul, concerned a little bit about your conscience, why then would I roughshod over you over something that I myself place in the realm of liberty? Why would I do that? Am I putting you before me? But see, that's what Paul commands us. And he uses the illustration of Jesus leaving the glory of heaven to live in the flesh of man even unto death. Why would he do that if he put his own interest above yours? Well, he wouldn't, would he? But he becomes our illustration of this very point in Philippians chapter 2. Now, number 5, what does it mean to offend your brother? And how could an expedient do that? Roy?
Something to do with his conscience.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Here's something in the realm that I acknowledge is liberty. I may do it or I may not do it. God hasn't legislated. He could care less about whether you eat meats or not, except by the exercising of that liberty, you cause your brother to practice something he believes is sinful. Okay? Any question or comment? Question number 6. No, we're done. All right. Let's look at the questions that you have on your lesson sheet. The questions that you have on your lesson sheet. My lesson sheets are older than yours, so I can't tell you what page that is. Mine aren't numbered the same as yours. But we're examining the text, reading the text. What does the text say? Manual, do you have a copy of these? Lesson number 6? Yes, Okay. Does anybody else not have a copy of lesson 6? All right, Roy, I don't think I have any more up here. I made some more 7s. You'll get one later, okay? You're telling me, Richard, I got 5 minutes? All right, good deal. Question number 1. Betty Jo, would you read that and fill in the blanks for me?
All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. 1 Corinthians 6:12.
Very good, very good. Linda, number 2, please.
For we walk by faith, not by sight.
All right. Penny, you have these. Okay, that's all right. Randy, number 3.
For whatsoever is not of faith is sin.
That's an interesting statement. Number 4, Peggy.
All things are lawful.
Help her out.
All things are lawful.
All right, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. Yes. Go ahead, Richard.
I don't have it.
All right, David.
All things are lawful, but not all things are edifying.
All right, not everything edifies. Number 5, John, please. I want to talk about that. By faith, Noah prepared an ark to the saving of his house. Could Noah have acted by faith when God had not spoken?
No.
No. To act by faith, as we've mentioned from Romans 10, verse 17, faith comes by hearing. You cannot act by faith when God hasn't spoken. To act by faith means to hear what God said and do it. All right? Number 6. Carolyn.
I'm sorry, I was looking back at number 4.
Okay. Number 6 is the one we're looking at. All right, Katie? All right, anybody on that row? Anybody on the next row? Jonathan?
Let all things be done unto edification.
All right, good. And where is it?
1 Corinthians 14:26.
All right, number 7, Jimmy. All right, David. All right, good. Number 8, Rick. All right, who can I pick on? John. Number 8.
Take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to their ability.
That's found where?
That's found in 1 Corinthians 8:9.
All right, good. Linda, number 9. Yep, it'd be you. I noticed that.
I don't have that one.
All right, who has it? Betty? Chris?
That's 1 Corinthians 8:11.
All right, that one comes from a passage actually we've not discussed. Romans chapter 14. He's discussing the same issue of eating meats that have been sacrificed to idols. And he says, "For meat destroy not the work of God. All things indeed are pure, but is not evil for that man, or but is evil for that man who eateth with offense." Now, Roy, that drives the point home a little further. You see, meat, or for meat, don't destroy the work of God. He says, all things indeed are pure, but it's not for him. It's evil for him who eats with offense. He can't do that. It offends his conscience. And if it offends his conscience, then I ought not to behave in such a way that would influence him to do that. Does that make sense? Long as it's lawful, I may do it, but not in a way that would cause him to do something he thinks is wrong. Now that tells us here is a realm of things that are lawful, but not all things in that circle edify. So if it tears him down, I'm not going to do it. Can't do that. I can't act in a way that would cause him to do it. Now, does that mean I can participate in it if it's lawful in a way that won't cause him? Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah. So there we are. All right. Let's begin with the questions next time. And by the way, everybody listen, we're going to begin with the questions next time. The one that begins with define expedient. Now, you know what that means, right? If we start there next time, what's that mean? Those of you in my class Wednesday night.
Be ready.
You have them done. Okay? Everybody have those done. I'm going to pick on you. Oh, by the way, if you do not have a copy of lesson number 7, it's called The Work of the Church, Evangelism. Now, folks, we're getting to the heart of the things we're talking about. We've laid the groundwork. Now we're getting to the application. If you don't have one, there's few left up here on the table.